This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
The U.S. says China is no longer a currency manipulator. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. That decision from the U.S. Treasury Department has sent China's currency, the renminbi, to a five-month high against the dollar today. But what exactly does it mean for China? From Beijing, the BBC's Stephen McDonnell has the government's reaction.
It's a positive step. It's a sort of olive branch from Washington in the lead-up to signing this phase one of a deal which is designed to break the trade war impasse. I think many would see this as more political than it is economic. But if you look at the response, for example, on global markets, they're taking it pretty positively because it just shows these global superpowers getting on with one another.
The reason Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin gave for this decision was that China has made enforceable commitments to refrain from competitive devaluation. Do we know what those commitments are, and is China likely to stick to them?
I'm keen to see the detail of that. I think some will think this is a kind of surprising development, especially given that for years the US has accused China of being a currency manipulator. And to have this drastic turnaround on the basis of promises from China will leave people scratching their heads and wondering, well, how real can it be?
And the US and China are due to sign their phase one trade agreement tomorrow. The BBC's Stephen McDonnell in Beijing. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's do the numbers. Global shares are a little changed as investors wait for that U.S. and China phase one trade deal tomorrow. Gold is down 0.3% this morning, while global oil is trading slightly higher. The future of a U.K. airline, Flybe, is in doubt amid emergency rescue talks with the government. The company hasn't posted a profit since 2014, but with services to 15 European countries and more domestic flights than any other U.K. airline, many say its operations are crucial for local economies in hard-to-reach cities. The BBC's Simon Jack then explains why a bailout is so controversial.
Beleaguered Flybe asked the government to consider deferring tens of millions of pounds the company owed in airport passenger duty to help stave off the collapse of Europe's biggest regional airline. That presented the government with two problems. First, the creation of what Boris Johnson has previously described as a moral hazard, a dangerous precedent that would lead struggling companies to believe they could rely on the government to help them if they got into financial difficulties. Second, any company-specific assistance would likely fall foul of EU rules on state aid. The solution? An industry-wide cut to airport passenger duty for internal UK flights. That proposal will be discussed at meetings between the Treasury, the Department for Transport and the Department for Business scheduled for later today. It allows the government a chance to help Flybe while delivering on its promise to improve regional connectivity, a key manifesto pledge. It comes at a cost to the public finances and may be criticised for making it harder to deliver on promises to reduce the UK's carbon emissions.
The BBC's Simon Jack reporting. Sitting down to breakfast this morning, chances are some of the food in your bowl was grown using commercial fertilizer, which contains phosphorus, an element that's become vital to life thanks to its widespread use in the food and agricultural industries. Morocco leads the world in phosphate mining, giving it a strategic advantage as food production increases alongside global population growth. But the mineral isn't without controversy, as the BBC's Matthew Davis reports.
Standing in this landscape makes one feel rather small. This is the Khouribga phosphate mine, not only the largest phosphate mine in the world, but one of the largest open cast mines in the world. And this mine has 43% of all global reserves of phosphate.
But the economics of most resources are never straightforward, and phosphates are no different. The vast majority of the world's phosphate reserves have a geopolitical issue, which has been unresolved for nearly three decades. Western Sahara. Stephen Zunes is a professor of politics and international studies at the University of San Francisco.
There was a guerrilla war between the time of the Moroccan conquest and a UN-brokered ceasefire in 1991. The Polisario agreed to stop fighting in return for a UN-supervised referendum. But the Moroccans never allowed that to take place. They basically attempted to stack the voter rolls with Moroccan colonists.
So, like many of the world's resources, phosphates have become a political hot potato, based on where they are and who claims sovereignty over them. This is where there should be a response to the whole Western Sahara issue from an official of the Moroccan government. Unfortunately, after weeks of emails and phone calls, they failed to make anyone available. So it's difficult to tell exactly which way the winds of change, if indeed there are any, are blowing in Western Sahara. But both Morocco and the SADR are now members of the African Union, and there's some hope the situation can be sorted out through that grouping. But for the moment, it looks as if a lot of the phosphates used to make the fertilizer, used to grow the crops, used to make the food we eat, will continue to come from this region. And because it's an element so central to food security, it seems many of the world's governments are unwilling to rock the boat too much. In Casablanca, I'm the BBC's Matthew Davis for Marketplace.
Finally, here's a tongue twister to start your morning. Bung a bob for a Big Ben bong. That's a phrase Prime Minister Boris Johnson used today in an interview with the BBC. But what does it mean? Well, in American English, he might have said, give a dime for a chime. He's throwing around the idea of starting a crowdfunding campaign for people to donate funds to get Big Ben, which has been under renovation for the last 2 years, to ring at 11 p.m. on January 31st. That's when the UK will officially leave the European Union. You better get the campaign started, though. It's estimated to cost just more than $500,000. In London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.